This is Crucial Tech, a podcast about technology that affects all of us in a format that allows you to consume it in the time it takes to go to and from the grocery store. I'm your host, Lou Covey, and I probably know more about it than you do. And if I don't, I know someone who does. But first, this episode of Crucial Tech is brought to you by Cyber Protection Magazine. Did you know that people who consume news in print generally trust that medium more than any other medium you can find, including social media? If you want to reach out to your customers and get them to understand that you are a trustworthy person, advertising in a print publication is the best way to do it. And in the cybersecurity world, with Cyber Protection Magazine, you are advertising in the fastest growing publication in the industry. So the next time you're thinking about advertising, why don't you take a look at Cyber Protection Magazine? People will trust you when you do. Welcome back to Crucial Tech, our final show of the year, the final show of this particular season, and our end of the year predictions for 2023. We had put out a call to various PR folks and companies that we'd worked with in the past and asked for them to give us one or two paragraphs of what they thought was going to happen in 2023. And one of the people I asked was our friend Ian Thornton Trump, the CISO of Syjax in the UK. And he put together an entire presentation for me. Not just a couple of paragraphs or just some random thoughts. He had a lot to say. And so I said, let's put this on the show, make this our end. It's going to combine with an article that we've got on the magazine, at Cyber Protection Magazine. And so let's go on with it with Ian Thornton Trump and his wild man predictions for 2023. So, Ian Thornton Trump.
Lou, or as I like to call you, Blue Lou Marini, the saxophone player from the Blues Brothers.
Yeah, I remember them.
It's great to see you again. Before we flip over into the new year and all the things that are exciting and new, and maybe a lot of the things that might be almost exactly the same as they were last time. But what do you want to talk about, Lou? Like, we could go anywhere with this conversation, as we usually do.
Yeah, well, the thing is that we're getting ready to do our predictions for 2023.
Right.
And usually what we do is we just ask somebody to send in a couple of paragraphs. But you came back and you got really excited and wanted to do this entire briefing. So I said, well, hell, why not? He's always a lot of fun.
Yeah. It's totally appreciated. I hope I didn't squeeze out other opinions, because as you know, I like to come prepared for the gunfight, my friend.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, one of the things we told people when we were asking them for their predictions is, okay, number one, don't tell me that cyber attacks are going to go up. Because that's like saying, you know, the sky is blue. Mm-hmm. So they're all going up. We've done some research and found that while cyber attacks are increasing almost exponentially, mm-hmm. the number of successful attacks are going down.
Indeed.
Because people are getting more security aware and they're buying more services and they're not doing stupid things. They still are. There's still a lot of successful attacks, but I'm more concerned as what are we going to be looking at for 2023? Because, you know, the criminals are going to be making adjustments. There's been, I think it's like 135% increase year on year on the number of attacks that are made. Mm-hmm. But I'm also, you know, I was just talking to some people who aren't security experts, and they say, hey, I got this thing from Zelle. Should I do anything about this? I says, yeah, you should ignore it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they don't even have Zelle. But I wanted to find out on a more macro level about what we could be looking forward to as the disasters for 2023.
Yeah, you know, it's gonna be a wild year, and I'm gonna go out on a limb and say some things that you know, I think, you know, you can challenge me a bit on. And I guess really the only way of seeing if they ever come to fruition, right, mate, is to check in next year. So book me now. Let's see how well I did. First of all, let's look at macroeconomics right now, macro geopolitical trends, and focus in on the traditional threat actors, right, which is your Chinese, North Korean, Iranian, and Russian. I think for 2023, going to go out on a limb and say there's actually going to be less APT activity out there, right? But there's going to be more cyber criminal and entrepreneurial and maybe ex-APT operators that are getting all like, hey, we got to get a second stream of money going because economic times are hard and I haven't been paid by my government in months because they have an economic hard time.
So yeah, for my mother-in-law, APT means Asia Pacific Theater. Right?
yeah. Okay. So she's a little older lady there. Yeah. I gotcha. But so I think the standard bugbear of those groups, they've got major troubles at home. Mm-hmm. They're in the case of Russia, they're focused on the Ukraine and supporting Russian operations and being the global protagonist. Iran has all sorts of problems going on. I see that APT threat landscape is being oversold by the security vendor community. However, the cyber criminals are changing, and I agree mm-hmm. with you 100% that the attacks are taking on a different character than they were. I mean, you're always going to get the phishing emails. You know, that's always a thing, but we're getting better at blocking them. I think I haven't seen anything for Viagra or Cialis in years, I would say. So our learning algorithms, it's baby
steps.
Yeah, it's baby steps, Lou. But I feel like that attack vector is going down. External probing of vulnerabilities is going up. Rapid weaponization of 0 days attack, which is something that the APT groups were really good at doing. But now I think that those techniques have now moved over into the cyber community, criminal threat actors. And I think the last thing that's on my radar right now is the stats around fraud, cyber-enabled fraud specifically, okay. Right? And that one is really interesting. So right now in the UK, if we take this a microcosm of the G19 in general, right? Because we booted mm-hmm. Russia out, they're no longer in the G19. Anyways, if we look at the stats here in the UK, it's phenomenal. 40% of reported crime related to fraud is what they've got on the books right now. They have allocated less than 2% of policing resources to fraud in the UK. So what does that mean? It means your actual every officer that's in the UK right now has over 2,000 files on their desk when it comes to fraud. Okay?
Yeah, and I think it's probably the same in the US.
Yeah, and so you know, when we look at the C3 or the report that comes out, the I3 report every that comes out every year, we see business email compromise, romance scams, and the old school, Lou, of I'm going to buy something from you but never send it to you, and okay. I'm going to take your money, i.e. the entire Facebook marketplace ecosystem.
yeah.
Right? What we're seeing here is weaponization of data that's been previously stolen at an unprecedented rate. Okay?
Okay.
So it's used to arm phishing attacks with enough legitimate information in them that you think twice, that, hey, is that really a package coming from me from UPS, right? Is eBay.ru really the seller? You know what I'm saying? Like, so we're in this situation where the amount of stolen data about us, and I'm not even talking about data aggregators and the ability to try and sell you things semi-legitimately, but I'm talking about the raw amount of stolen data around your life, around the companies that you work for, around those corporations is coming back at us in spades. And the cyber criminals, you know, of course, they're always going to be motivated, I think, by the big ticket ransomware attacks that's like, I'm demanding $10 million, you know, from you in ransom, because I've already figured out that you've got an insurance policy that will pay for business interruption without a cyber peril because they've done their homework, right? Versus that I'm going to take $2,500 from the entire, from an entire, you know, book of businesses in the states of Ohio, right? Okay. So it's sort of like, I feel like it's death by a thousand cuts in the mid-market, and still the big cybercrime crews with those weaponized APTs are going after the big scores. You know, we need a cyber version of Ocean's 11 right now, which would be, you know, 10 Russian guys and one American that they make the fall guy for the attack, right?
Okay.
So I feel like we're seeing the metamorphosis. We're seeing the change. I think cybersecurity spend will continue to, you know, accelerate in certain areas. But Lou, you know, the research is telling us the thing that's killing us is the stupid things we've done in the past that we haven't gone back and fixed. And in some cases, we take the stupid and we just put it in the cloud and call it digital transformation. And so, you know, if you take a vulnerable system right now that's behind your firewall and your EDR and all your fancy stuff, and the business decides they're not going to pay for 10, they're going to allow you to start moving and migrating stuff to the cloud, what we're doing is we're just lifting and shifting, and we're sending that really vulnerable stuff up into the cloud on really vulnerable machines. And then we're surprised we're getting hacked, right? And we're getting hacked at cloud speed as opposed to hacked at, at least I have to figure out how to get through, you know, the traditional layers of your defense in order to, you know, exploit the things that you've got behind those layers of defense. So, okay, so in a way.
So you're essentially saying that for 2023, the primary target for criminals is going to be cloud applications.
I think so. Yeah, I think there's a lot of old apps that have been put into the cloud with very little done to protect it, even though all the technology either natively exists because the folks putting it there don't have security advisory or consultancy or skill set to do it proper, right? You know, okay. Anything that you're putting in a cloud today should have a web application firewall, multi-factor authentication, and a CDN in front of it. And if you're not prepared to figure out what those things are and you're not prepared to spend the money to do it, then you have no place putting vulnerable stuff, including vulnerable, sensitive personal data into the cloud.
Okay. So I was reading the Mozilla Foundation Privacy Not Included list.
Okay. Yep.
And the thing that popped up immediately to me, and I, you know, I'm an Amazon, you know, I have Amazon Prime. I use too. Alexa. I've got a couple of Amazon devices, Roku TV, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And Amazon is just right up there at the top, right next to Facebook, as to be the least private type of devices. I mean, you can make them private, but they don't come.
Oh, they sure don't. No. Yeah.
But with the story that Amazon has lost $10 billion on the Alexa device market.
Yeah.
And they are laying people off in that division.
Yes, they are.
I think these are going to become even less secure than they have been.
Yeah, because it directly leads to monetization. Oddly enough, we're conditioned to train our web browsers to and work with them interactively. Mm-hmm. But just telling Alexa to go and buy something and confirm the purchase was a vision that Amazon had, that Bezos had, that people were just not comfortable shouting at their digital assistant. And this is, you know, the stories that we got of an entire, you know, giant van full of dishwasher soap showing up at your house because, you know, there was a bug, right? Yeah. Or there was an issue. And all you get is a really angry delivery guy who fills your pool with all of that stuff. So for me, it's like, we're doing what the large companies are doing, and Meta is a little bit like this as well, they are spending money to build a market for something that they think is cool. And this is sort of the anti traditional school of business, which was, you know, do the market research, extensively test, you know, and see what sort of the acceptable level of digital intrusion is going to be versus how much commerce is it going to drive. The reason why, you know, all of these voice assistants have failed is they couldn't figure out how to monetize it.
Right.
Right. And so ultimately we're in a similar space with the metaverse in that basically I think Facebook took what $10 billion, set it on fire in a parking lot, and tried to create our online dystopian future when currently, Lou, the future that we have right now is pretty dystopian enough. I don't honestly think we need to improve on the dystopia. So I think we're into this weird thing where, you know, almost like the Elon Musk business model of I'm just going to keep building rockets until they stop blowing up, as opposed to let's like really carefully think about it. And this is why I think philosophically, it's really interesting that it took so long for NASA to like embrace Elon Musk's SpaceX program, is because they looked at him, I think, as, you know, way more, way less risk adverse than their organization. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he was just like, let's fire it up, kick the tires, light the fires and see if it lands or not, you know? And so there's two different approaches. And we saw this in the pandemic with Zoom, which was the company everybody hated to love. And they got, you know, raked over the coals about their, you know, less than adequate cybersecurity back during the pandemic. And what they did is they took all that money and then they built security. Right?
Yeah.
But at first it was like, you know, almost a wide open platform. You had the Russians showing up and porn coming into your Zooms with your family. Like it was mayhem. But again, you know, it's sort of like build the market and maybe they'll come.
Yeah. And actually, that's the phrase that I've used in a different way. I say it's the field of dreams marketing. If I build it, someone will buy it.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really work. However, let's do a segue here because, you know, we are talking about cyber threats and fraud. And you sent me this presentation you did on the Enterprise Windows Security Summit.
Thank you.
And this jumped out at me because it's something that I've fought in the back of my mind for a while. Because you know, ever since I got into this, I keep getting the notes all the time about how much cybercrime is costing the economy. And you had a headline, cybercrime to cost the world $10.5 trillion annually by 2025.
Yes.
And you had that comment, this cybercrime data does not even make sense. Let's talk about that.
Okay. All right. Let's really get into it because there's so much interesting stuff attached to this. So first of all, Cyber Ventures comes out with it every year, right? Yeah. And just keeps cranking it up.
Yeah.
Right? Like, let's flat out. Now, the opportunity space in cybercrime, according to the latest report I could find, okay, in the cybersecurity and industry, is they're saying it's a 1.5 to 2 trillion space.
Right.
Right. Okay. So let's drop it by 2 trillion right off the bat. Shall we? So it's wrong at a most macro level possible. The other thing that makes it super wrong is that the latest study we could find on actual organized crime, transnational level, clocked in at about 1.6 trillion to 2 trillion, according to the data that I actually presented in that presentation. So again, are we saying that all organized crime is cybercrime, or are we saying that there's actually, you know, now 12 trillion in cyber-enabled crime? Right. So are we talking about ransomware here, or are we talking about the whole ecosystem? Now, if we are going to say it's 10 trillion and that's the whole ecosystem, including cyber enabled fraud, that's super interesting to me because one, cyber criminals don't generally file tax returns. Okay. So we don't really know how much they're making in terms of a profit. Two, we know that there's a lot of companies out there, Lou, that would take your money to make you more defendable against this threat. Mm-hmm. So are they part of that cybercrime economy as well? Because if you get breached, what do? You pay a lot of money to a company to unbreach you.
Yeah.
Okay. So we just deconstructed that. The second thing is, and this is the kind of the thing that really kind of blows my mind, right?
Yeah.
If you look at it as a cost, right? You're assuming that the cyber criminal operations don't actually cost them money to conduct this types of attack and build their own infrastructure and everything like that. Newsflash, it does, right? But I think more importantly, the top tier are living the life of oligarchs who are buying yachts. So, you know, if you go out and you buy a $50 million boat and you pay Bitcoin for it, right? Yeah. Because of your ill-gotten gains, you still bought a $50 million boat from someone. So that money is actually getting reinvested. So even though you might be an American boat company, if you happen to be, shall we say, a pick your random Middle Eastern country that doesn't have nearly as much oversight on purchases of $50 million yachts, right? That money is going into their economy, not your economy. So this is why, like, it's not like, so it's sort of like, in a way, you use that old kind of Newtonian physics or Einstein's theory that energy cannot be created or destroyed. Cybercrime money cannot be created nor is it destroyed. It is literally reinvested in one form or another, whether that's employing people illegitimately or even employing people semi-legitimately. Because, Lou, you know what you need to do when you have a giant pile of cash? You got to find a place to stash it. Okay. Yeah. And you do real estate, you do offshore banking, you invest in all sorts of stuff. Casinos are good, car washes for the lower tier, but casinos are better at the higher end.
Yeah.
Right. You're still creating an entire economy. Now, it might be an illegitimate economy because the money going into, but the cleaning staff at the hotel that you happen to buy, or the restaurant that you happen to have a partnership in, or even the multi-tiered building, all of those salaries are being paid.
Right.
So this 10 trillion number that rocks around and everybody starts using it in fear, uncertainty, and doubt, like it is like the stat that we should be all afraid of. Honestly, a cyber attack sucks for the organization that gets one, but there are plenty of organizations out there that have successfully fended off the bad guys. And they're making money because you're failing to defend your organization. So we've created the perfect economy of cyber crime versus cyber defense, and it will just keep going on for the foreseeable future, and the numbers will get bigger and bigger because everybody wants to turn and profit, even the bad guys.
So let me see if I can sum that up.
Good luck.
The investment community, the companies that are putting money into cybersecurity startups,
And
the private equity companies, they have a vested interest in making sure that we think that things are worse than they actually are.
I think that's, it's a psyop. I think that's a very good analysis. And that the companies that they're actually investing in are worth way more than what their value is actually on paper.
Yeah.
Right. That's the other kind of problem that we have, in that many of these companies are carrying huge amounts of debt and have these absurd profit to earnings ratios that you wouldn't find in any other sane industry, except maybe banking. And that's kind of interesting in itself, right?
Okay. Well, actually, I think that answers all my questions. I mean, I flipping through your slides here, I like the one you brought up about, who is this again? I think it was Microsoft. Showed a stock.
No, you're probably thinking about Marriott.
Oh, Marriott. Yeah.
Yeah. I like to make fun of them because basically they seem to have had an annual data breach every year since 2010, actually seven of them. And I use them for illustrative purposes because one of the fear, uncertainty, and doubts that has fed us all the time is if you get a cyber breach or a cyber attack, you know, your company's going to be done. Well, Marriott has done two things. One, they've gotten cyber breached all the time.
Yeah.
Two, they've reported it and, you know, caveat, not lied about their data breach every time it's occurred.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And they had, well, you can see there for yourself, Luke, they had a pretty healthy run there. Right?
Yeah.
450 expense on a profit of 1.6 bill. That's pretty good.
Yeah,
I'd say.
And the low point was during the pandemic, and now they're right back up to where they were before the pandemic.
Exactly. Right.
So that's why it would seem doubtful that there is that much of a of damage to the economy by cyber attacks. Now, that isn't to say that you shouldn't be securing yourself, because as you said, if you get hit, it sucks for you.
That's right.
Yeah, but it doesn't mean it's having that much of an impact on our economy overall. So that's the good news. And I think that's probably going to continue on for 2023, you think?
I think it is. I think companies, though, are going to be driven because of regulators, shall we say, I think the regulators are getting disappointed that all of the effort and all of the banging of the drum has not resulted in more tangible results. So look to see some pretty nasty regulations coming out of the United States and Europe to try and contain the bleeding as they see it. I do think we're sitting at the moment where we just got fed up with having our sensitive data constantly breached. I think we got fed up with seeing large companies turn record profits and then not protecting data adequately. Mm-hmm. If you're living hand to mouth as a manufacturer in the Midwest and you get rolled, or even a municipal hospital or municipality mm-hmm. that gets rolled by cyber criminals, I have a lot of sympathy for you, because I know you're living hand to mouth. I know that chances are you're working on 2.5% margins in the manufacturing industry. You've yeah. got transportation costs and electricity costs. And if you're in a municipality, you've got major legacy systems that you've never had any money to replace or upgrade. So I have sympathy for you. I don't have sympathy for companies that have had huge annual turnovers enough to buy their own stock back at a profit and are, you know, basically data breached by, you know, something as benign as a vulnerability that hadn't been patched in, you know, 90 plus days.
Yeah.
Right? It's an entirely different story when the company's been a commercial entity that has been making gobs of money and gets data breached, rather than, you know, a company that, you know, is really doing its best in truly difficult economic times.
Yeah. Well, Ian, thank you very much. As usual, it's been a fascinating and fun discussion, and I hope you and yours have a happy Christmas in England.
Appreciate it. Absolutely will. And thanks again, Lou. It's always great to talk to you.
Bye-bye now. So that's it for 2022 on Crucial Tech. We'll be coming back next year with some interesting interviews. One of the things we're going to be doing is talking to the CISO of Rockwell Automation, who happens to be a woman, and a woman of color at that point, because one of the reasons I like this industry so much is that it has really made an effort at diversity. And it's something that's near and dear to my heart, and I'm hoping that you will be able to tune in and find out what we're going to be doing next year. Thank you for listening this year. Thank you for making us a success. We couldn't have done it without you. So this has been Lou Covey with Crucial Tech, a Foot Washer Media production.